You can hear Morning Edition every weekday from 5 a.m. to 9 a.m. right here on KUSP. Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP, KBDH San Ardo, or on the web at kusp.org. Grey Wolf Computer Systems has provided a grant in support of this program. Grey Wolf Computer Systems offers custom computer systems and personalized service for repairs, upgrades, and networks in the East Cliff Village Shopping Center in Santa Cruz. It's October 21st, Monday, 6:30. Time for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gap between geeks and humanity every Monday from 5, from 6:30 to 7. This is Lyle Troxell, Almost Conscious, here at KUSP. Tonight we're talking about the art of deception with Kevin Mitnick. Kevin Mitnick is a, world famous or infamous hacker, and he'll be on air with us in just a moment. This program is supported by a grant from Seagate Technology. Seagate is a worldwide supplier of disk drives for PCs and servers and innovations for products like the Microsoft Xbox, digital video recorders, and digital jukeboxes. Information is at Seagate.com. During tonight's show, we will be taking calls for pledging to KUSP. The phone numbers are 476-5900 or 1-800-655-KUSP, and I urge you to call in and support your public radio station. The views expressed on GeekSpeak are not necessarily those of KUSP. In the air room, I have Daria Troxell and Miles Elam. They're going to be joining me as we talk with Kevin Mitnick. Kevin, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi, how you doing?
Quite well, and yourself?
I'm doing great.
I have been... Your book came in the mail to me to preview it, and I've been reading it frantically over the last few days.
I hope you've been enjoying it.
I have been, tremendously.
It's kind of like you're reading a series of Mission Impossible stories, huh?
It basically is, and to understand that they're so close to reality is, well, both exciting, invigorating, and kind of scary.
Yeah, what's really scary is that while a lot of people don't know might not be aware of my background, I was busted for hacking a number of years ago, and I used to use different types of techniques to compromise computer security. And one of them was exploiting technical vulnerabilities, and the other was exploiting people. And what these stories illustrate is the methods and strategies that I've used in the past and that computer hackers are using today to compromise computer networks and get access to proprietary information and such.
And you've classified, I don't know if you coined the phrase social engineering, but that's what you call the tactic of using people as the ways to get information rather than just technology.
Actually, social engineering, I learned about the term in my early years in the 1970s when I was involved in this hobby called phone phreaking, which was about exploring the telephone network. And social engineering at that time was about learning the terminology and lingo that phone company employees use to be able to pass yourself off as an employee so you can call any department of the phone company and talk them out of information.
It's funny because I've been reading this book, and today I work at a university, and I just happen to call someone that I don't actually know. It's in a different department, and I wanted to recommend a friend for an interview or for a position there.
Uh-huh.
And I called and I said, "Hi, my name's Lyle, and I work with such and such and such and such," and threw a few names off so they'd understand who I was. And of course, right away there was a trust built up. I could have not been Lyle. I could have just gone to the website and seen the staff pages and looked me up, and somebody else could have called.
That's one of the techniques. That social engineers try to use is they try to quickly, what the cycle is. The social engineering cycle is merely researching the target, developing a trusted relationship, exploiting the relationship to get information or to have them do something that creates a security hole. And then the attacker goes, well, did I meet my goal? And if not, they go back to step number one. And one of the primary ways that social engineers work is to try to get the person to like them, because when people like other people, they're more apt to comply with a request. And one of the ways of doing that is by dropping names of people that others know in a particular department or even at a university, and then the target will believe that you're one of the team. And that establishes, just as you said, that liking and they're more likely to do what you want them to do.
And it does make sense to a lot of degree. What I was shocking to hear in these, I know, fictitious stories, but based somewhat on reality, one of your examples you use that a computer programmer is at home and is called by a stranger and actually gives out his username and password to the stranger. The stranger doesn't really have that much information and is able to do it even though the person was called knows that it's a bad thing to do.
Yeah, that's about exploiting fear. I think the example in the book you're talking about is where the attacker calls the person at home, claims that there's been a serious computer crash at the office or at the business, and this was a large corporation I think I illustrated in the book, and tells the person that their files, you know, might not be recovered for, you know, several days. And, of course, the social engineer has already researched the target and realizes that he or she needs those files to do their daily work. So the target's freaking out, going like, I need this stuff. I'm not going to be able to do my job. And then the social engineer acts indifferent, like, you know, hey, you're just one of, you know, many that I have to, you know, try to resolve this problem. But, you know, hey, I'll do you a favor. You know, maybe we could expedite this, but I'll need your help. I'll need a few shortcuts. And if you could, you know, give me your username and password or tell me what number you're dialing in into the system or go in and configure their computer a certain way. Because telecommuters are also a prime target, because a lot of telecommuters have a VPN, a virtual private network connection, into the corporate network. And if the social engineer could trick the unsuspecting telecommuter at home to do something that allows them to get access to their machine, well, they'll just hijack that connection, and they're in that company's internal network.
It's a fascinating book. We are talking about The Art of Deception with Kevin D. Mitnick. Kevin is best known for kind of being the most wanted man.
There's a lot of misconceptions about Kevin Mitnick. I had a New York Times reporter, John Markoff, write a false and defamatory story about me on the front page of the New York Times. And what happened is it created the myth of Kevin Mitnick, that I broke into NORAD and hacked into the Pentagon and did all these things I never really did in real life and that were never done. They were just done in the movies. And then there's the reality of Kevin Mitnick. I was a hacker. I gained unauthorized access in the corporate computers, which was against the law, and I paid a heavy price for it. I spent 4.5 years in pretrial detention, 8 months in solitary confinement, because the government also made me kind of an example for a number of reasons, but they scared the judge by claiming I can start a nuclear war by getting access to a telephone. My case became a cause célèbre in the media. Yeah. And unfortunately, what's come out of that is a lot of misconceptions about, you know, who I am and what I did. But what I did do is I broke the law and I was punished for it. And now I'm taking all this experience and knowledge I have of how people compromise information security, and I'm trying to help the government and business and individual people protect themselves. I mean, people like you and I, there's people out there that want to steal our identities to, you know, use our credit. So this doesn't just affect big business, but it affects you and I.
And that's what the book is doing, is kind of bringing to light the tricks that are being used on people so that people can be more aware and defend themselves.
Exactly. Did you hear about the lady that was recently taken with this Nigerian scam? Do you know what the Nigerian 419 scam is?
No, I haven't heard.
It's where you get this email, and it's coming from a different country, and they claim that there's $25 million, that there's been some family trust, and they need to move it to the United States. And if you'll just allow them to deposit it in your account, you'll get like 25% of it or 20%. And this is like spammed out to everybody on the web. And what happens is then they ask for additional monies because they need to take care of taxes or some other fees. And meanwhile, people are duped into sending them money, and you'll never see the $25 million. It's
right.
All a scam. Well, recently, a lady actually embezzled $2.1 million from the law firm she worked at, because she figured she'd borrow the money, pay the taxes or whatever was needed. She'd get the $25 million, you know, she'd get a windfall of $5 million, pay the $2.1 million back and profit $3 million. But what she didn't know is she was duped. And if it's really too bad she didn't read the book, because then she could have understood the tricks that people play, and then she wouldn't have been a victim of this.
Yeah. Well, Kevin, just hang on just a second. You're listening to Geek Speak on KUSP. The pledge numbers are 476-5900 or toll-free at 1-800-655-KUSP. We urge you to make your contribution to KUSP so we can keep on shows like this and keep having renowned hackers on the air.
We would very much like to thank Christiana of Mountain View for her very generous first-time ever pledger to KUSP. Thank you very much, Christiana.
Miles, do you want to talk about how cool KUSP is?
We're here to celebrate 30 years of service to the Central Coast and how lucky we are to have public radio as a daily part of our lives. We are celebrating music, in-depth news, interviews with authors, announcements of all sorts of events in our communities. And we are celebrating thousands of listeners who make contributions to help pay for these terrific programs. We never think of public radio as a sure thing, but we know it's irreplaceable. That's the value of public radio, and that's why you are so important. Ensure the future of public radio by making a pledge now. Please call 476-5900 or 1-800-655-KUSP, or you can pledge at our secure website, kusp.org.
And I want to say one more thing about that. I was driving in this morning listening to NPR, and Kevin, you were on NPR recently.
Quite some time ago.
Yeah, right. I heard the interview. I heard fragment of the interview, and then someone reminded me of it earlier today when I mentioned that you're going to be on the air tonight. So you've kind of been all over the place.
Yeah, I think I did that NPR interview in Los Angeles quite some time ago.
Did you like it?
Yeah, doing interviews is interesting. A lot of people wonder what I'm up to these days and what my past was all about. So I try to share it. But what's also interesting that you might want to be aware of is I started a company called Defensive Thinking out of LA. We set up a website, and in this website is a forum that anyone could join for free. It doesn't cost anything, and what it does is people that are out there that know about the company, know about the book, could become a member of the forum, for absolutely free, and then they could read about different types of techniques and methods that hackers are using today to break into systems. Because what people are doing is we encourage hackers out there to share the information, and then we encourage people that need to protect themselves to go into the forums to read how people are doing this type of thing.
Wow.
So it might be interesting, and it's a real. We're trying to be like the end all and be all to these type of attacks and how people could protect themselves. Because it's pretty scary.
Is that defensivethinking.com?
Yeah, www.defensivethinking.com. And what's interesting is a lot of companies, spend a lot of their security budget on high tech solutions like firewalls, encryption, intrusion detection systems. And while all those security technologies are important, what they don't do is they don't train their people well enough, or maybe not even at all. And then the information thieves or the industrial spies or the hackers simply just make one phone call to one unsuspecting trusted employee and trick that person into doing something, and all the money they spent on those security technologies is just wasted money. I'm really surprised that there hasn't been other books written about these techniques.
Yeah, and it is fascinating. I mean, I've been involved in a couple of companies that did have secure IDs, and you have a great chapter on secure IDs, a great little story about secure IDs, and that's double authentication, in that you have to have your username and password, and you also have to have this this little number, the six-digit number that changes
every 60 seconds.
Right, and so you tell a great story about even with that system in place, this hacker was able to get into the systems.
Right, right.
By simply
a lot of people
just
think
asking
that,
for it.
Yeah, a lot of people think that dynamic passwords will stop these type of attacks, but that's untrue. A really cool attack that I didn't put in my book that you might be interested in is, imagine this: you're working for a company, you get it, or somebody's working for a company, not you, namely there's some random person. They walk into the elevator, and on the elevator floor there's this disk, 3.5-inch floppy. It's red. They pick it up. It's the logo of the company, and it says a confidential salary history grid for all executives, managers in the company. So the curious employee picks this up and goes, he's looking at it and going, well, should I or shouldn't I? And you got to figure that a lot of people are going to go, okay, I'll just check it out, then maybe I'll turn it in or throw it in the garbage. The guy, the unsuspecting victim, pops it in their PC, comes up, it looks like either an Excel spreadsheet or a Word doc. They click on it. It says that the file's corrupted, it can't open it. Meanwhile, unknown to the victim, it just installed spyware, like a computer wiretap. So every keystroke the person does on their computer is captured and emailed out to the hacker who has a free Yahoo account in France. Or better yet, the hacker's already compromised some other computer sitting on the internet, and it makes an outgoing connection, because don't forget, a lot of companies allow any user inside to connect out through their firewall, and then to the other computer, and then the attacker is able to tunnel back through. So it creates like a reverse connection.
And all the person would have to do is have access to the elevator and the company logo.
Right, or to the bathroom. They throw it in the bathroom, like, or anywhere, or even at the coffee shop across the street from the targeted company.
Or 10 of them, and just throw them around locally around the area.
Exactly. Yeah. And let's say you have the Good Samaritan employee, the honest one with integrity, and turns it into human resources. Well, human resources is going, what the heck is going on here? They put it in their machine to see what's going on, and they get hit.
Right.
See, and that's exploiting people's curiosity. That's kind of a social engineering attack, if you will.
Not a trust base, but a curiosity.
Yeah, social engineering attacks is where the attacker communicates by phone, by fax, in person, by email, with some sort of pretext or ruse, and deceives that person into performing, you know, revealing some of their system information, typing commands in the computer, downloading a piece of software, to, you know, trying to log into a different machine, and they use their same username and password. There's so many different methods that are used that a lot of unsuspecting people fall for it.
We're speaking with Kevin Mitnick, the author of The Art of Deception. And we are on Geek Speak. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP Santa Cruz, KBDH San Ardo. We're on the web at kosp.org. And if you go to kosp.org, Kevin can't do that, but you can.
Right.
You can, and we'll talk about that in a second. You can go ahead and make a pledge to KOSP to make sure that we keep on staying on the air and that we are able to bring you interesting shows such as this evening's
Geek Speak. Yes. We would like to thank John of the Tracy family.
John's one of the regular geeks.
John is one of the regular geeks, and we would like to thank him very much for his generous pledge to KOSP. Thank you, John, for keeping us going.
John is great, isn't he?
Yes, he's fabulous.
Hey, did you hear about the laptops?
Which ones?
The FBI recently gave me the laptops that I used during my hacking years.
And you're selling them.
Yeah, did you hear about it? I put them up on eBay. I got like over $15,000 in bids. And these are like covered with the original fingerprint dust, with the FBI signature, and FBI evidence bags. And they still work, right?
Right.
And we ended up getting a whole bunch of fraudulent bidders, you know, some kids. So we had to relist it on eBay in Raleigh. But I was really surprised about the interest of the press on selling these old laptops. I guess they're historical in a sense, but it sure got a lot of... Everyone I talked to already knows about it, so
what's
I guess you already did.
Yeah, I did a little bit of research on you, and there's a lot of information on the web. Have you heard of that? No.
The web?
Yes.
Yeah, I heard it.
So wait, you sold some stuff on eBay. Now, eBay is an internet company. Is that legal for you to do that?
Yeah, in fact, there's a misconception that I'm not allowed to use computers. I'm under these really stringent conditions of what they call federal supervised release, which expire, by the way, in 3 months from today, where I can't use any technology without the permission of the government. So last January, when I signed a contract to write this book, The Art of Deception, my probation officer gave me permission to get a laptop. So I have a Sony Vaio running Windows XP, and of course I needed Word, but I'm not allowed to use the internet yet. But I'm having other people that access the internet on my behalf. For example, I did my own talk radio show in Los Angeles for a year, and the whole show was about demystifying the internet. So can you imagine a person that can't even go hands-on to the internet doing a radio show about it? So that was kind of ironic and amusing.
Okay, you can't go onto the net, but I'm curious though with the.
But I can tell you too.
All right, with regards to your skills in the past, have you been reading up and keeping up with security issues and?
Yeah, of course.
Stuff that's been going
yeah,
on?
I mean that's my field. I do public speaking. I do security consulting. I just started up this brand new company, Defensive Thinking. So. I have to be up to speed on this stuff, else I wouldn't be too useful in helping people.
Does that mean you have people like printing stuff for you?
Oh yeah, all the time. Well, I have a call. Yeah, I have a whole staff.
Yeah.
That does the you know production and accesses the web. I have family. I have friends. I have coworkers.
Kevin, what makes someone become a hacker? What is it? Is it an adrenaline thing or?
Well, for me, well, a lot of different people come from different backgrounds. You might have some kid that likes vandalizing stuff and writes a virus to, you know, to destroy people's work.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have hackers that are more benign, which I put myself in that category, where I did it more out of the pursuit of knowledge, the intellectual challenge, the thrill of being somewhere where I shouldn't have been. It was more about exploring cyberspace more than trying to steal information or damage computers or crash systems. What my case was about was I illegally copied source code that was the brains in cellular telephones and operating systems like Sun Microsystems stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And why I did it, you know, why I did it was to learn about the ins and outs and the security vulnerabilities. So that was my intent behind it. And regardless of my intent, I still broke the law.
Right.
And then you know the rest.
But weren't you fined some exorbitant amounts of money in your trials for?
No, the government claimed that I caused over $300 million of loss, and the theory was ridiculous. It was pretty much laughable, but to this day, they pretty much get people believe it. Is I accessed like the source code to like a Solaris that's manufactured by Sun, and I looked at the source code, never used it, never distributed it, but I accessed it without permission. Well, the government's theory was that since I accessed it and it was confidential, that Sun lost the millions of dollars they invested in research and development of developing Solaris. So that's the great analogy is if George Lucas was developing a new motion picture and I snuck into his computer and read the screenplay but didn't tell anybody about it but just read it, and then the government coming up with a theory, well, you know, you just cost George Lucas $20 million because now you read his screenplay. And that was the theory they used. And then they just accumulated all the R&D that companies like Motorola, NEC, Fujitsu, Nokia had put into developing their products.
Kevin, as an average person who buys stuff on the Internet, Amazon, we bank online, how concerned should we be about people like you, hackers?
Well, you don't have to be concerned about me
because
I'm a retired hacker.
People how you used to be.
Not you specifically. Yeah. But not you specifically, but just hackers in general.
Well, I mean, I'd be concerned about your if you have DSL or cable, or even if you're on dial-up, I'd run a personal firewall, like, mm-hmm. For example, Zone Alarm. I would definitely keep antivirus software up to date as much as possible. But don't forget, the attacker doesn't want to get your credit card. Using your credit card over the Internet, I think, is as safe as using it in a restaurant.
Right.
Usually when I get my receipts, when I go out to eat, it has my full credit card number on there with expiration date. Well, if an attacker targets just one person, and usually anytime they do a credit card transaction, it's an encrypted session. So it may be extremely, a hacker would have to go to a lot of work to basically decrypt one credit card number. So what they do is they'll pick a target like Amazon, eBay, CD Universe, other companies that have millions of credit cards in their database, and will try to break into those companies, and that way they have the person's name, their address, their city, state, zip code, and credit card number expiration date. And that's where the attackers go after. But don't forget, bricks and mortar stores that, like for example, the Gap, you can go in the store and use your credit card. That information is still stored, may be stored, I don't know, by the Gap, in a database, and that database may be accessible via the Internet because the attacker gets into the Internet and then eventually gets into the company's internal network. Maybe they keep this information in a SQL database, and wham, the hacker has everybody's credit card.
Right.
But don't forget, you're only liable for $50 if somebody misuses it. It's really more of a pain in the butt, but at the end of the day, you're not going to have to pay for it.
Kevin, let's talk a little bit about good ways to, and I don't want to, you know, divulge the secrets of your book, by the way, which is The Art of Deception, Kevin Mitnick. One of the things you mentioned, which I think is great, is that if you're in a corporation situation and someone calls you and builds a trust relationship with you by just saying, hi, I'm from this other department, and spits out some names, and maybe you don't know them by name, but you've seen their name on the org chart or something, a good way to verify is to put them on hold for a second and call their extension back that's listed.
Yeah, just people can do real simple things to verify other people, but it really goes to what is the request. Is the request for something like a trade secret? I mean, then you might want to go through an additional procedure because of the sensitivity or how valuable the information is. I mean, you can use caller ID. By the way, I didn't know if you know this, but if I had wanted to, I can call you at any phone number and I could become anybody on your caller ID. I can become the President of the United States. Spoofing caller ID is very trivial. You just need access to a PBX that's provisioned, what they call, for digital service. It's called PRIISDN, and anybody could spoof. So if you get a call, for example, from something from your bank, it may not be your bank. It could be an attacker that has spoofed their caller ID.
Don't trust caller ID.
What?
Don't trust caller ID.
No, don't trust it. You can trust ANI if you have toll-free numbers, and you get calls on toll-free numbers, but not caller ID. People, you know, could verify people through callback, have a third person vouch for them that knows you and the other person. They could use what they call a shared secret, like what the banks use is what they call a code for a day. Each day the code changes.
But aren't those codes normally written down because people forget them so easily?
Well, in the bank situation, it's any teller could look it up on their computer. And what private investigators do is they use the tactics that I described in the book. And I don't know if you read the thing called the reverse sting, where there was a method by which private investigators are able to trick a teller out of revealing the code for the day. So now they could become a bank employee for the day and ask any other branch for confidential customer information.
I haven't gotten to that part of the book. Must be later than the middle. Sorry. But everything I've read so far has been great, and it has really started me thinking about how I produce trust in my life.
Yeah, there has to be a balance, because it really depends. If you're a company selling widgets, you know, your interest for security is going to be a lot less, or your acceptable level of risk is going to be a lot higher than if you're a financial institution or healthcare that's, you know, you heard of any of the HIPAA requirements that require they're legislated more security for healthcare institution, finance, government, manufacturing. You know, there's a different level of security, so it's not like a one-size-fits-all. The different countermeasures really depend on what you're trying to protect. But on how people detect attacks, one of the most common things is if a caller refuses to give their callback number, or if they're dropping names or trying to intimidate or flirting. You know, there's different signs the caller could look for to try to detect if someone's trying to dupe them. And then what people should be trained to do, if they realize that somebody is trying to trick them to do something, they should use the same techniques to draw out as much information about what the attacker is going after. For example, if the smart employee realizes that the attacker is going after the customer list of the company, then all the resources could be concentrated on protecting all the access points to that customer list, or every employee that has access to it, to send them a voicemail or email notification. If somebody is calling or requesting this information, don't give anything out.
Right.
Otherwise, what happens is if the social engineer fails to trick one employee, they simply hang up and try the next one.
Central Coast Public Radio isn't owned by a corporation or a large institution. The station is not in business to make money. Our mission is to enrich your life. We do that by providing you with the best news in the country, by bringing you diverse and great music, by keeping you in touch with the people and events that impact our community. That's our mission, to enrich your life. If we're doing that, you can let us know by becoming a part of the KUSP community. It will only take just 2 minutes, and you decide what it is worth to have Central Coast Public Radio in your life. Please call in your pledge now. After all, it's in your interest. We are here for you. Please call 476-5900 or 1-800-655-KUSP, or you can visit our website at kusp.org.
And I want to make a comment that every week we're here on Geek Speak. We're all volunteering our time to make sure that technology is a little more understandable. Daria?
Understandable.
Okay, good. Bye, everybody. And hopefully my ranting and raving helps in some way. And also the geeks, of course, being here every week. Kevin, thank you very much for being on Geek Speak. We're running out of time very quickly. Is there anything else you wanted to say?
No, just really quickly, the whole way to try to protect yourself is really comes down to three things: preventing an attack by becoming aware of the different methods and strategies that attackers use, being able to know the signs to detect an attack, and finally, how to respond to it, and responding and having a security hotline set up at the company so it kind of acts as an early warning system. That way, if an attacker calls one employee and they realize that it's a suspicious call, then the person that has that responsibility could notify people in that business unit or department that something fishy is going on.
Well, Kevin, thank you very much. Kevin Mitnick, The Art of Deception, Controlling the Human Element of Security, available in bookstores now by Wiley.
And you can get it on Amazon.com, by the way. Too.
Okay, cool.
Okay,
thank you very
thank
much,
you.
Kevin, for joining us.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, it's great to hear from someone that's kind of a reformed hacker, I guess.
Yeah.
And it's interesting.
Internet celebrity, if anything.
Yeah, complete celebrity. I mean, he's very well known.
Great to have on the show. And also just, you never give out your information over the phone to someone who has called you.
Yeah, big thing. And don't, you know, if they give you the number to call them back, that doesn't necessarily mean a good number. You can pick up a cell phone for $30. That's totally unknown, you know. But the cool thing is we have these shows on GeekSpeak. And we have these shows on, we have GeekSpeak on KOSP because KOSP is supported by people
yes.
that listen. So if you listen to if you can hear my voice and you haven't contributed, please call us now. Contribute some money. Help us out in helping you bring enriching your life with information, education, and entertainment. 476-5900 or 1-800-655-KUSP 5877. Miles, do you have something to say?
Yes. If you're like me, you have a whole pile of monthly bills to pay, rent or a mortgage, a car payment, phone, PG&E, your cable bill, your newspaper subscription, all these things that come on your credit card bill every month. They add up, we know. That's why we're asking you to make your monthly bill to KUSP the smallest bill you pay, $10 a month. You can pay it on a monthly installment program using your credit card. We'll be your smallest monthly bill and your biggest bargain.
Cool.
Thank you very much for listening to GeekSpeak. Coming up next, Two Steps on the Blues with Charlie Lang. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP, Santa Cruz, KBH, San Ardo. We're on the web at kusp.org. But first,